Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There were three ravens sat on a tree. Down a down, hey, down a down. They were as black as they might be with a down. One of them said to his mate, "Where shall we our breakfast take? With a down, derry, 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 down, down."
Welcome to Local Legends, a series of interviews from the Three Ravens podcast with remarkable people who have singular perspectives on England's folklore, heritage, and historic counties. My name's Martin Vaux, and today I'm speaking to fairy folk. Not literally the magical creatures in the hedgerow, but to the podcaster, YouTuber, and Instagram personality about whom, by design, the internet knows next to nothing. One of the things about this interview is, unlike all the others for the series, fairy folk likes to remain anonymous. There's a few reasons for this, some of which we talk about in our conversation, but because the interview isn't so much about her, it is a bit shorter than the other episodes. Still, I'm talking to fairy folk this week in relation to Somerset, where both fairy folk and I were born. We didn't know each other before Eleanor and I launched Three Ravens, but she was one of the first podcasters to come forward and welcome us into the podcasting world. As you'll hear, she's extremely friendly and has quite the voice. Indeed, for people of a particular generation, her voice might just be recognisable. Not wanting to give away any secrets, of course, but over the years, she has lent her dulcet tones to some huge broadcasting companies, and you can easily see why. In terms of what Fairy Folk does, well, she has a folklore podcast, for one, launched in the pandemic, which is aimed a bit more at younger children and families than Three Ravens. She has an extremely cheerful delivery, and based on my experience, if you're ever feeling down in the dumps, one of her episodes is all but guaranteed to cheer you right up. Elsewhere, though, she also releases short documentaries on YouTube on a range of topics, from the ghosts of the London Underground to Shakespeare's cursed bones to, appropriate for this week, an episode all about the fairy king who once ruled Glastonbury Tor. And who knows, maybe he still does. We're not counting him out. Where fairy folk is perhaps most busy, though, is on Instagram. And on Instagram, she posts short form videos, tons of photo guides to marvellous places around England, and things like top tens and top fives to inspire people to visit and learn more about aspects of history and folklore from around the UK. In short, Fairy Folk is doing the work of her namesakes, sprinkling a bit of magic into the world. But considering the modern obsession with the individual and a culture where a person's face, especially a woman's face, is a disturbingly valuable commodity on the internet, one of the coolest things about Fairy Folk is that nobody knows who she is. She maintains her privacy and also prioritizes putting the folklore first, which is very interesting to me, especially because Fairy Folk is the youngest person I'll be interviewing across this first series of local legends. Isn't the word on the street that people from younger generations are self-obsessed? Is that perhaps an unhealthy myth that needs busting? To a certain extent, I think we can all agree that wisdom has a correlation with age. If you'd spoken to me in my 20s, I would have likely sounded like an absolute dipstick. And who knows, maybe I still do. Maybe in 20 years' time, I'll look back at the things I'm saying right now and despair. Still, I was extremely interested to talk to Fairy Folk for these reasons, to hear from a younger person having success in the folklore space, and because she's a Somerset native, like me, born in the same Taunton hospital many years apart. Musgrove Maternity Ward, big shout out. Anyway, I was very happy that Fairy Folk could find 40 minutes or so to speak with me. And if you would like to listen to her podcast, watch her videos, or check out her rolling coverage of Great Britain's folklore on Instagram, you can find links to everything she does on her website at thefairyfolk.libsyn.com. I will link to that in the show notes. But without further ado, here's my chat with a bit of a mystery of a local legend, a friendly enigma and all-round force for good, the Fairy Folk. Okay, so the first question I have to ask you is, why launch the Fairy Folk podcast in the first place? Like, what inspired it?
Oh, that's a great question. Thank you. So it actually began from my love of myths and legends and storytelling that I just was always drawn to as a child. And as I got older, I also got into the folklore of place and how lots of different places in the United Kingdom have their own local myths and legends. So I was just going to plan a holiday or a little trip, try and visit all of these places. But then, funnily enough, my plans got a bit scuppered in 2020 when yes. It became a lot harder to travel to places. But at the beginning of the year, I sort of thought to myself that I wanted to start podcasts and maybe talk about some of those myths and legends that I was interested in and create a kind of virtual tour of these places rather than driving around and going to them myself. So, yeah, that's sort of the backstory.
And so, yeah, like you say, you launched in 2020, not the most opportune moment in time to be wandering around the United Kingdom.
No.
But since then, you've done loads and loads of stuff, including a bunch of YouTube content, like across sort of 3 years, 4 years, really, some pretty seriously researched, like mini documentaries, and a huge amount of work must have gone into that as well.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't do as much of that as I'd like to because it ends up being quite a huge undertaking. But it's something that I really enjoy. And yeah, I'd like the chance to do some more. But it's nice to add some visuals sometimes to podcast storytelling and also to try and put myths and legends out on several different social platforms that people might be watching or listening on.
Well, yeah, because you do, you know, short form video content as well and a massive amount on Instagram. I mean, do you think that folklore and social media are actually unlikely bedfellows that work quite well together?
I think so. I think there's something about storytelling, which in general is something that I'm really passionate about. And I think storytelling exists in all different formats. So that's on social media, on video, podcasts, as well as you know, live face-to-face storytelling as well. So I think it's just naturally finding its home on all these different platforms as technology evolves. I think storytelling will evolve with it, which is quite nice to see.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? I mean, we have a huge amount of fun doing stuff on social media ourselves. And, you know, through Instagram and through YouTube and a little bit in the short form space, you know, you tell some stories, you do kind of educational content. But one of the things that I love most about your social media content is the way you do kind of lists of places to visit and recommendations and listicles and those kinds of things. I mean, what inspired you to go down that route?
So I think that's mainly because of my love of UK travel, and something that I like to do in my podcast is like really connect place with folklore, which I guess the Three Ravens also does, which is really, really nice to see. I think there's just something magical about connecting a story with a tangible place that you can go and visit. And I also think that there's a lot of places that are nearby to people that they might not want to visit or know that they could visit. So it's nice to go, hey, there's folk tales in other places rather than maybe just some of the more well-known places to visit like Cornwall or London and that sort of thing. So I like to highlight those as well.
And I think one of the interesting things about the way that you've approached a lot of this content is that you are a mystery. Like, you don't appear in any of it. Normally, when people think about social media, it's about, you know, shoving themselves first. And I mean, we've spoken a little bit off this conversation about reasons for why that might be. But it's interesting to me. Could you try and explain to people out there why you've made that choice? Because there's something appealing about the mystery of not knowing who fairy folk is. But is it just about building mystery for you?
Well, you know what? It's actually a lot of reasons. So I don't want it to be a kind of thing. Like, I don't want me being like slightly anonymous to distract from the content that I'm making. But I just like the idea of being like a friendly narrator, really. And I'd like my content to be the thing that people connect to rather than me as a presenter, if that makes sense, which is kind of an unusual approach. And it can be difficult because I know people connect to, especially on social media, they connect to seeing someone. But I'm a little bit shy when it comes to putting my face in front of the camera. And yeah, I think I like the idea of not being this podcast with this person. It's like, this is the podcast about this content. And I'm just like a little narrator or a guide or a host to take you through these myths and legends. So yeah, I'm still hiding.
But it puts you in an interesting position, and it makes the relationship between you and your audience quite interesting as well. Because you're so mysterious, in a way, you can be anything and anyone, and that's quite freeing as well. So I think there is major advantages to that. Now, if we turn to Somerset, you and I are both from Somerset. We're both from the county.
Yes.
What was it like growing up for you in Somerset? How would you describe it to an outsider?
Well, yeah, lots of lovely countryside and fields, I think, was something that I absolutely loved growing up. There was always beautiful countryside to get lost in, places to visit. I was really lucky in where I lived that it was very close by to villages. So I was able to explore those and, yeah, visit the parks. It's a very leafy kind of green upbringing, which I absolutely love. I really love being close to nature. So that's something that's really important to me. So, yeah, there was a lot of fun times. And I guess that's where the love of magic and folklore came from as well, because I think when you're in that kind of environment, you can't help but imagine the sort of creatures that might be lurking in the forests.
Well, definitely. I mean, the county is undoubtedly pretty rural on the whole. There's a lot of nature about. And when it comes to folklore and folk traditions, how important do you think it is, that rurality, that being outside of civilization?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think because things like urban legends grow up from more city spaces. So I think myths and legends and storytelling and folklore grow from people, really, more so than the landscape. But then I also think that the landscape can help inspire these tales. And so perhaps when there are particular rock formations or mountains or elements of the landscape like that, they can inspire these tales perhaps a little bit more than things that are a bit more modern or built up. So maybe that's where the connection comes from. I'm not sure.
Well, I think there's always going to be something about the thing you don't understand that you make up a story about to help it make sense.
Yeah, definitely.
In a simple way. And it's very easy in a way to make up stories about the weird things that are in the forest over there, because you don't want your kids to go into the forest, or the strange people over that hill who you need to keep away from because 300 years ago we used to fight with them. So you can kind of see how a certain amount of folklore grows out of places. As you say, it's always about people, isn't it, and how they see the world. But with Somerset specifically, I mean, it's obviously part of the Southwest. So you could, if you're being cynical, kind of fold the county into a broader swathe of counties, including potentially Cornwall, but certainly Devon and Dorset, maybe Gloucestershire and Wiltshire. In your mind, though, are there things that you think are Somerset specific? Is there a county culture to Somerset that you could draw out or even get your fingers on?
I think there's definitely a connection with those other counties that you mentioned. I think there's that kind of southwest energy, which is quite nice. You know, it's nice to have the neighbouring counties, because I did spend a lot of time in Cornwall and Devon and Dorset as well growing up. So it's quite nice to have them surrounding. I think Somerset in itself does have its own identity and feeling. And it is interesting because people expect me to have a certain kind of accent, which I do not have as well. So I have to apologise that I don't have a lovely stereotypical Somerset accent. But yeah, so I think it does have its own charm and its own myths and legends. Definitely things like Glastonbury, for example, that feels very, very Somerset. So yeah, I think there's a lot of myths and magic that comes from Somerset specifically as well, like Wookie Hole and Cheddar Gorge and things like that as well, which I think it makes it special and gives it its own identity in amongst the rest of the Southwest, I think.
Yeah, I think it's in a way part of our human character also to draw lines and go, well, this is this place and that's that place, but everywhere spills into everywhere else, and stories do travel just like people do. So I think it's kind of natural that in a way, yes, there are, like you say, these important Somerset locales and traditions as well in some places, but also, you know, they don't exist as islands, do they? They have interplay with other places too. Okay, so for our listeners who've never visited Somerset, they have no real preconceptions, how would you describe the county? If you're being a bit of an ambassador, what would it be like to visit and see Somerset, do you think?
Oh, I've not really viewed it like that, if you know what I mean, because being someone that's from there, it's hard to look at it in the way that an outsider would, because I'm sort of thinking of the places that I grew up and the school that I went to and that sort of thing. But I definitely, like I mentioned before, would say that it's somewhere that is surrounded by lovely countryside and hills. There's plenty to explore in terms of sweet villages and bigger areas, more towns. It's got that rural identity, but then also there's a lot of places like, for example, Taunton, which funnily enough, I'm also from. So there's a lot of places like that that are more of a county town. So it's got a bit of a different identity to what you might expect from a village such as Dunster, that's like very cute kind of thatched cottages and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's somewhere that I would definitely recommend to anyone, because I just have so much love for it because it's my home, really. And I think we all have that connection to the places that we're from and where we grew up. So yeah, come and visit.
No, definitely. So, I mean, it's a very, very interesting county and I'm, you know, back frequently.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that always strikes me about the county is the way that there is some very old stuff that kind of smashes a bit awkwardly with some of the slightly more modern parts of Somerset. I think that there are parts of Somerset we can say with love that are a bit down on their luck.
Right. I couldn't possibly say.
You know, I think if somebody were to visit Yeovil expecting a Paris of the Southwest, they might be slightly disappointed, certainly at the moment. But as you've alluded to, there are all of these incredible historic locations and natural formations. Like when we think about the Mendip Hills as this huge rolling area, absolutely extraordinary. The county borders Exmoor as well, which is its own magical and wonderful place. So yeah, there's a lot to recommend it. not least the Quantox as well, who are pretty, yes. they're pretty famous. And yeah. then people, I think, forget that the county has the northern border with the Bristol Channel as well.
Yeah, so true, so true.
So there's quite a lot going on in Somerset. But in terms of Somerset folklore then,
yes.
do you have any particular favourite tales that stick out to you or that you always come back to, and why are they favorites for you?
Well, there's plenty to choose from. I think for me, probably Glastonbury Tor is somewhere that's just got so much folklore and magic and stories connected to it, so it's somewhere that I think a lot of people gravitate to. Even people that haven't heard of Somerset, they know Glastonbury, and uh-huh. you know, a lot of people that aren't into folklore know Glastonbury from the music festival, so it's somewhere that is really well known and famous. Yeah, I love the connection of to the fairies and also to King Arthur, so it's a really well known and interesting place for folklore.
And when we think about Glastonbury, I mean, in times past, people need to remember that it was an island. Right, yes. it was surrounded by water, so that mm-hmm. alone gave it a very special status.
Yeah,
Somerset, you know, for a long time was defined by its wetness in a way. You know, yeah. the Somerset levels, all those places like marshy, boggy, as well as these kind of raised and holy places like Glastonbury. Yes. But fairies are a big feature of Somerset folklore as well. I mean, when you think about Glastonbury Tor, I know that you've done a little bit about the fairies in Glastonbury Tor.
Yes.
But what are the associations between Glastonbury Tor and fairies for people who aren't familiar?
Yeah, so Glastonbury Tor was the place where the fairies held their courts. Gwynap Nees, the king of the fairies, had his court there. But unfortunately, St. Cothlin came along one day and he threw his holy water all over the fairies after getting upset with them and their unholy business on the tour, and their wonderful castle disappeared. So the tale goes, but who knows, perhaps it had a fairy glamour and is still there. But that's kind of the tale in a nutshell.
And then Glastonbury, of course, has its associations, as you mentioned, with King Arthur. And King Arthur is one of those characters of the Southwest. He just keeps on cropping up time and time again. I mean, yes. where do you stand on, the realness of King Arthur? Because I feel like that's an inevitable question that you have mm-hmm. to ask about King Arthur. But also, you know, Glastonbury as a site where, theoretically, that's where his body was buried, you know, yes, that there is yeah. the marker there of his grave, which mm-hmm. blows my mind every time I go.
Yes, yeah. I think, it's a difficult one talking about King Arthur and Arthurian legend. It's not something that I've dipped into too much myself because there is so much. And it's one of those things that if I try and summarize and talk about it, there's just so much that I feel like I can't necessarily do it justice. But the stories are very fragmented and there's different creatures and elements of the story that maybe might crop up in particular tales. I do enjoy the myths and legends, but I try not to touch on it too much because that's a podcast in itself, I think.
Well, it yeah. is. When we started Three Ravens, Somerset was one of our first episodes that we did because I thought, mm-hmm. that's my home county. I want to get in there early and talk about it because I'm excited. But then yes. as soon as I did, I realised, oh my goodness, I should really be talking about King Arthur, and immediately got terrified and kind of ran in the yeah. other direction because it's so huge as a subject area.
Absolutely, yeah, it's huge, and I'm a bit scared to dive into that world, but there's certainly you can't avoid talking about King Arthur because those legends are just so embedded in the whole of the UK, really.
Oh, definitely. But and I think that there's a specificity to it which runs through Wales, which of course is just on the other side of the Bristol Channel. Yes. From Somerset, and you had kind of Brittonic cultures, like people sailing from Brittany, as we call it today, in northern France, up to the southwest and then around to Wales. And between all of those places, there's a kind of mythical interplay where gods and heroes and stories are shared and names might change and shift. But the basic idea of a lot of these stories is kind of evident in loads of different versions, which makes it really intimidating when you're like, so what is the story of King Absolutely. Arthur?
Yeah, and I think that happens with a lot of myths and legends in general, that it can be hard to kind of pull all the pieces together to create one version. But we try our best as storytellers, we try our best.
That's where the storyteller comes in, isn't it? Yes. That's where we have to start picking and choosing and making choices.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So aside from Glastonbury, are there particular other places in Somerset that you gravitate towards or that you particularly love, or other stories that aren't necessarily linked to place that ring particular bells for you, or that get, you know, that are things you always come back to?
Yeah, well, there's one quite funny ghost story actually from Taunton, and it's an old Tudor building which is now a Cafe Nero. And so with me and my friends growing up, like, I was trying to be like, this is the haunted Cafe Nero, but I don't think it's caught on. But I was, you know, trying to make some folklore of my own to be like, come on, like, this is a haunted building. But you know, I don't think it's quite stuck. But there is some ghost lore to that Tudor Tavern, as it's called. It's one of the oldest buildings in Taunton, and there's meant to be some sort of ghostly legend that's connected to Judge Jeffreys, the hanging judge, and there's a lot of that history in Taunton. One of my favorite books, actually, Haunted Britain, there's like a little section in it being like, a photo was taken that showed something spooky, or, you know, but there's no elaboration on what was in the photograph, where it was taken, and that detail. So yeah, I really enjoy that legend because that's pretty much it, but I knew it was haunted, so, you know, there's some proof there.
Oh, how fun. Yeah, well, in terms of Judge Jeffreys, I mean, he's a character who towers over the Southwest in terms of, you know, the amount of people that man hanged and sentenced to awful fates. When you think about something like ghost legends and ghost lore, very often ghosts are linked to trauma, aren't they? Like in history, these moments that have really stung a community. And yeah, I think that he's a very likely candidate to be someone who is going to haunt places, because, I mean, he haunts the memory of lots and lots of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's very true. And the courts were held, I believe, in Taunton Castle as well. So that's another place that I think he haunts as well. So yeah, there's definitely that cross between folklore and history, which I really love and I find really interesting when you can sort of trace things back to where they came from, particularly with ghosts and when they're connected to real history. I love those stories so much because it's not someone necessarily creating something to scare people. It's that remembered history that's had an impact on the people that have retold those stories.
Potentially while they're trying to buy a coffee.
Yeah, exactly, right? It is a haunted Cafe Nero. We need to spread the word.
So these days, Bath is considered its own separate thing. It's not really considered part of Somerset, but traditionally, I think we should drag it back in and say,
bring it
okay,
back, it's time.
You always were part of Somerset. I mean, but for people who don't know Bath terribly well, how would you describe that city? Because it's kind of mad as a place.
Yeah, you know what, Bath is actually one of those places that I think a lot of tourists come and visit who potentially are coming from outside of the UK. It's one of those tourist spots where you go, right, I've ticked off London, I've ticked off the Cotswolds, and I'm going to go down to Bath. So Bath is just really beautiful and really historic. It's very connected to Jane Austen, so any of those kind of period dramas that you might have watched
that's Bath, you know. Yeah. So I think it's got that beautiful traditional quality to it, and I think it's somewhere that feels very unique maybe to the UK, and that historic spa town, there's not very many of those left. I think Buxton is also one of them, but yeah, Bath is lovely. But don't go to the Roman baths and bring a towel, as I heard a story from. No, I didn't, but I heard a story from social media recently. I need to find the person that posted it, bless her, because she said that she'd turned up thinking that it was wasn't the historic landmark and was somewhere that she could have a quick dip. So I very much enjoyed that story.
But you know, people do privately rent parts of the bath to swim in. It's allowed to do.
That.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
You can pay. If you've got enough money, then you can go splish, splash, splash in the bathtub. But it's wild to have those layers of history, as you said, from the Romans right the way through. I mean, we see a lot of Georgian architecture there. It's primarily famous as a kind of Georgian, almost like a whole town or city that's a museum in a way as you're walking around it.
Yeah, that's a good description.
And on ground level, it seems quite modern because you're looking at shop fronts and all the rest. But if you lift your head up and look, there's statues on almost every building that you can kind of stand there agape at and marvel at, like, what's going on? How is this here? You expect it to be in somewhere like, you know, Rome, I guess is the closest thing I can think of, really. So, yeah, that's the international tourists, I reckon they're going to gravitate to Bath. I reckon they're going to go.
I recommend it. They should come.
they should. It's great. But for those a bit more in the know, a bit more on ground level than perhaps local tourists, where do you reckon they're going to be going when they're visiting places in Somerset? Like, where are those hot spots? I mean, you mentioned Wookie Hole already, which is a very peculiar sounding place. If nobody's heard of Wookie Hole, they could have all sorts of things running through their mind. So, fairy folk, what is Wookie Hole?
A great question. So Wookie Hole is a series of caves in Somerset that's famous for its witch legend, which we love to see. And it's also kind of become a little bit of an attraction theme park sort of place nowadays. I've not actually been. I've not been. It's like the place to go if you're from Somerset, you know, but I haven't been myself. But yeah, I've heard good things, you know, it's a place to go. I want to go and see the witch as well. And they have someone that's employed to be the witch of Wookie Hole as well, to greet the kids and everything. So every couple of years, there's like a massive local newspaper story saying, you know, hiring for the witch, and all these witches are lining up to try and interview for that role, which is, to be honest, the dream role, I think. it's a unique place.
It is. On one level, it's just another hole in the ground, a limestone cavern and cave. But it firstly feels particularly magic. There is the legend of the Witch of Wookie Hole.
Yes.
But also the people who run Wookie Hole do have a sense of humour, and from time to time will put quite silly amusements down in Wookie Hole. I'm not going to say tacky, but I could say tacky from time to time. Got to get the crowds in somehow.
Yeah. it's a very unique blend of folklore and geology, I guess, but then also trying to turn it into an attraction, which is an interesting choice. I want to go and visit. I think it'd be fun.
You definitely should. Absolutely should. How about Wells? I mean, have you spent much time at Wells? Because it's a pretty amazing little place as well.
Yes, Wells is lovely. Yeah, I haven't been as often as I'd like to, but that was somewhere that I would always tag on to the end of my Glastonbury trips and carry on to Wells. I think there's a lot of places like that in Somerset that feel a little bit untouched in a way, that they have kind of grown as the towns have grown as well. So they feel old and new at the same time, which is really nice. But yeah, Wells is a very lovely place to visit, and the cathedral is really cool as well.
That's it. I mean, obviously Glastonbury Cathedral is just a ruin now, but Wells Cathedral is one of England's 32 cathedrals. It's an absolute stunner. Bath, obviously, they've got another one just
that's
up the
true.
Road.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. But Wells Cathedral's lovely and really interesting how it floods underneath. I don't know if you've been down. And well, there's a cool Anthony Gormley sculpture down there where the water rises up the sculpture.
Oh, wow. I didn't know about that. That sounds amazing.
Mm. Want to go down into the crypt at Wells. It's a cool place to spend time. Yeah. Okay. So other tales from Somerset then that particularly mean things to you? I mean, I'm thinking back to when you were younger. Were there particular stories that caught your imagination when you were a kid? Like, how did you even catch the folklore bug in the first place?
Well, I think a lot of the myths and legends that I grew up on were actually the more like Greek myths and things like that that I was learning in school. So that was like my first introduction really to mythology and the idea of these little tales about mythical creatures and things that were almost beyond the little world that I was in as like an 8-year-old. And I had my little book of myths and legends that I thought, oh, this is incredible. You know, I think even like before you can read, you can see these like illustrations of creatures and ghosts. And I found them a bit scary. Like I didn't always want to like look inside the book because it was a bit scary. But then you have that kind of fascination and that love of like, oh, what does this mean? So I think I found that connection pretty easily. And I found it a little bit of kind of escapism as well. I think it's nice to think about things being out there and in the landscape that we have, and there's, you know, these creatures out there that I need to find. Like that was very much in my my head when I was younger. So that's where my interest in folklore began, I would say. And also I think in tales that had kind of bled in from other counties. So one in particular was the Beast of Bodmin Moor from Cornwall. And that was something that was used when we were at school and we were on this little summer camp and they were telling us this tale. And I was absolutely convinced that it was coming to get me. I was like, the beast is coming to get me. Like, I swear I can see it. Like, so it might still be after me. I don't know. It's got a personal vendetta against me. But yeah.
It could be very much so.
My advice on that is to just
keep moving, lock the doors and keep moving. And visit church. I think that's what you're meant to do. Although if it's Black Shirk, he doesn't care. He's going to just knock the doors
in. Yeah, he'll be in there.
So, that's going to act as no barrier at all. And then we've mentioned already Wookie Hole. We've also got Cheddar Gorge, another place that is a kind of stunning piece of like natural landscape. Mm-hmm. Your point about the, like with Wells, this sort of nature and modernity kind of rubbing up against one another. I think that that might actually be one of Somerset's kind of defining characteristics, because when you're in the middle of a town, it might feel quite like now.
Yeah.
But you only need to drive 10 minutes. And it's normally in Somerset, literally 10 minutes out of the town. And suddenly you're in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Somerset is ever going to be a place that becomes a truly modern county? Or do you think it's always going to be on that edge of fairyland, on that edge of mystery and magic and wonder?
Well, I hope it retains its magic and wonder for sure. But I think because it has thrived off of change, I guess, as a lot of counties have, I think it will always have that nature and that landscape and those lovely rural fields, I hope. But I think there'll always be a bit of magic there for sure, because it comes from the landscape, it comes from the hills, it comes from historic places, the Cheddar Gorge and its caves. I don't think these are things that people are going to want to lose, at least I hope not. So I hope they're protected and they'll always be there for people to explore and visit.
Yeah, likewise. All right, so three final questions. If someone was planning to visit Somerset, which particular place, or if you can't get it down to one, places would you say they absolutely have to visit to get a sense of Somerset's folkloric heritage?
Well, I think Glastonbury probably has to be at the top of that list. I think that's definitely the place to go. The amazing thing about Glastonbury is as well that all the kind of local shops are very tied into myth and folklore, and they've got a lot of neo-pagan communities. So it does feel like somewhere that has completely embraced its identity and connection to folklore, where there are other places where you might have a particular place to go and visit, but it doesn't necessarily tie into the town that it's in. But Glastonbury, they have so many different events and festivals. when I was there, like the infamous Merlin was out on the streets. Like if you're lucky, you'll see him like just walking the streets. It's great. So yeah, there's beautiful shop windows. I used to go almost every year actually in October and climb the tour and see all the shop displays ready for Halloween. Great time to go. So yeah, I think it's somewhere that is very, very connected to its folklore and its heritage, which I think will be something special for people that are interested in that to see. But yeah, there's plenty of other places that I would also recommend. So it's very hard to narrow it down to just one, I think.
Well, I think with Glastonbury, there is so much to do that you could easily spend 2 or 3 days poking around as a visitor.
Yeah.
If you've gone to Glastonbury. And one of the things that I would certainly recommend is trying to get up onto the tour to see a sunrise.
Oh, yes.
You don't always get the weather. But if you no. do get the weather to see the sunrise from Glastonbury Tour, it's sort of one of those once-in-a-lifetime experiences for most people that feels absolutely remarkable. So, yeah, I'm with you. Got to go to Glastonbury. What a special
place. Yes,
let's
go.
Okay. Next question.
Yes.
What's one piece of Somerset lore, or perhaps a misconception about Somerset, or about its history, its culture, but one thing that you wish people knew about Somerset, if they come away with anything from this conversation about Somerset, what do you want them to think?
I suppose that we don't all have that piratey, farmery accent that's the stereotype of the county. So I think that was something that when I went off to university and when I was living in London for a while, that was the main question that I got asked when I said that I was from Somerset was, oh, you don't have the accent, or you don't sound like you're from Somerset. So that's something that I've had a lot in my life. And I don't have that lovely stereotypical accent, which I can't even do an impression of, you know, like I can't even, because I think it's most of the people that were from Taunton, where I'm from, have the similar accent to myself. So maybe it's a little bit sad that perhaps over time it's died out. But yeah, it's actually quite a diverse county in terms of accents. So even within Somerset, you will hear stronger accents and then accents that are a little bit more clipped. And then you've obviously got the Bristol accent just close by. So yeah. Maybe that's something we should be talking about more. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if people want to hear strong Somerset accents, I've got loads of family members I can introduce them to.
Perfect.
Some of them are at that point of like, almost unintelligible to outsiders. Aww. Which is very sweet. I have in the past had to translate what great uncles have been playing to friends.
No, it's such a gorgeous accent though. I think it's brilliant. Like I would like to hear more of it, because I think it's almost like a fantasy accent to some people as well. Like it doesn't still exist. So it is a little bit sad that maybe us in Taunton don't have that accent as much now. Although you do hear it from time to time, but yeah.
They shoved it in Lord of the Rings when Samwise Gamgee started talking. I was like, really? Are we doing Sam from Somerset? All right,
yeah,
cool.
Let's
go for it. In terms of the other cliche, though, where do you stand on everyone in Somerset drinks cider?
I don't know. That might be one of those ones that's slightly true, although I can't say for myself because I'm actually teetotal. I don't drink alcohol, but I can recommend the apple juice. That's very, very good. Like Somerset apple juice hits differently. So
it's
that's something
isn't
I will
it?
Recommend.
But what I wouldn't recommend at the moment is the alcohol-free ciders that are available, because
right.
I've tried those.
I see.
And they're not it.
They haven't got there yet.
Don't go there. I wouldn't recommend it. I'd stick to the delicious Somerset apple juices.
Yes.
Unless you decide, today's the day for a Somerset cider. lovely. Last question then.
Yeah.
If people want to learn more about Somerset's history and folklore, where would you recommend they look?
It depends what you're looking for, I suppose, whether you're looking to learn more about the history or about the folklore. I feel like maybe the best place to start, if you can go and visit Somerset, would perhaps be to go and visit Taunton Museum, for example, the Museum of Somerset. That might be a really good place to interact with a lot of the history over time as well, and learn a bit more whilst you're also seeing things for yourself. So that's something that I would really recommend. But if not, there are plenty of books and online resources and that sort of thing that you might enjoy to peruse from afar. But yeah, I would love you to come and visit. So if you need a tour guide, let me know.
And one of the key resources online that you can find loads of short form videos. You can find stuff on YouTube. You can find amazing podcasts and tons of incredible Instagram content. It's from the fairy folk, isn't it?
Oh, well, you know, if you're on Instagram, if you're scrolling, you might as well click.
Lovely. Well, fairy folk, thank you so much for speaking to me today. It's been loads of fun.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I've really appreciated it.
How about that then? Fairy folk. See what I mean about the voice? Gosh, so nice to listen to. Anyway, Eleanor and I will be back on Monday with an all-new episode. This time, I'm taking us to Cornwall on England's southwest tip with an all-new story, of course. And next Thursday, we'll have a bonus Dying Arts episode all about clay pipe making, which, I'll be honest, is something I hadn't even thought to think about. Plus, next Saturday's episode of Local Legends will be an interview with a titan of the British folklore scene, Mike O'Connor. If you've not heard of Mike, you are in for a treat. Aside from being the author of the best-selling book Cornish Folktales, he's a prize-winning fiddle player, master of the concertina, and the leading researcher of Cornish instrumental music anywhere in the world. He's a fascinating person, and our chat is an absolute corker. As always, if you have 5 minutes, please do review Three Ravens wherever you listen. Check the website for merchandise and expanded information about our episodes at threeravenspodcast.com. Email us your local folklore or entries to our Three Ravens ghost story competition at threeravenspodcast@gmail.com. 3,000 words maximum, please. Make them good and scary. And do join us in all the usual places on social media. Facebook.com/Three Ravens Podcast, Instagram @Three Ravens Podcast, and on Twitter @Three Ravens Pod. And to chat with other lovely Three Ravens listeners, do join the Three Ravens Podcast group on Facebook. Of course, to support the podcast and unlock a ton of exclusive content as well as ad-free listening, please sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/Three Ravens Podcast. And don't forget that you can learn more about fairy folk, her work, and find links to all of her content on her website at thefairyfolk.libsyn.com. In the meantime, though, while our local legend has gone that way, we'll go this way. And remember, don't whistle until you're out of the woods. Our theme song is the traditional folk ballad Three Ravens, performed by Eleanor Conlon and Ben Harbour, and our logo is by Ollie James Dare. The Three Ravens podcast is a Rust and Stardust production, written and produced by me, Martin Vaux. Thanks for listening.
God send every gentleman such hounds, such hawks, such leemen, with a down, derry, 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 down, down.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.